sustainability used to be treated as a compliance task. Today, it's increasingly a business issue, shaping decisions about risk, cost, and growth. As customers, investors, and deal partners ask more detailed questions, being prepared matters. In this episode of the Privately Speaking podcast, host and KPMG partner Erica Whitmore is joined by Mara Hodge, KPMG partner and U.S. sustainability leader, to discuss what sustainability means for private companies right now, and how leaders can approach it in a practical, value-focused way.
Mara, so excited to have you back on the podcast today. It's been I'm kind of embarrassed. I think it's been way too long since you've been on. So Mara Hodge, who is a KPMG partner and known Mara for a very, very long time. So excited to have you back on the podcast. But Mara, maybe just to remind our listeners, can you just give us a little bit of a background on yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Erica. I'm really excited to be back with you. I serve as KPMG's U.S. sustainability leader right now, which means I'm responsible for all of the audit, tax, and advisory services that we bring to our clients in the sustainability space. Prior to this role, though, and how Eric and I know each other from way back, is I worked and set up our life sciences early stage venture capital practice in the Boston area and spent about 8 years doing that. And so it's been really fun to blend my experience as a financial statement auditor and looking at financial reporting and investor reporting for early stage companies, and then how that ties into sustainability and sustainability information and activities that companies undertake to bring value to their firms.
Which, and this is such an exciting landscape, right? In terms of sustainability and the current administration, right? And just, you know, sticking to the facts here, but a lot of moving pieces, right? And I think, you know, one thing, Mara, that we do a lot on Privately Speaking is we talk to our board leadership center, right? And we have them come on and share, you know, what are boards looking for, right? What's on their agenda, et cetera. And so I do think this is really good timing, right? Because of all the changing landscapes. And so, you know, kind of through that private company lens, but also recognizing that a lot of the folks, the audience that is listening have, you know, maybe aspire to go public at some point. What is top of mind when it comes to sustainability? And maybe that's the right term, or more if there's another term to use, like, let me know. But for 2026, again, given all this massive change.
Well, I love that you described it as exciting. That's one way.
The exciting might not be the right word. Maybe it's a lot of dynamic. I like that. Dynamic is better.
It has been, very dynamic, a lot of ups and downs. I think you pivoting to sustainability is a good first step. We've kind of put the term ESG to rest. I will say that having worked in this space for a long time, ESG was always a bit of a misnomer anyway, because it was so big and broad, and it basically referenced anything that could possibly be right. related to environment, social, and governance under that umbrella. So we've shifted our language to sustainability, but I think the reality is that where we're talking about sustainability and how it impacts companies now is really around where there is risk. We are given the landscape with, a lot of focus on cutting costs and trying to operate as efficiently and as effectively as possible, we see sustainability risks really rising up on the agenda of boards. And maybe you call them sustainability, maybe you call them climate, maybe you don't. But let me give you maybe some a little bit different.
But also, Mara, right, just the reality of we, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but I do think I want to make sure we cover this too. Like with all the data centers and all AI and all this, like it is about sustainability, but it's also about more trying to be responsible with the energy that you're using because the world needs more. And so anyways, I just want to, that is top of mind for a lot of folks, right? There's just a lot going on.
Absolutely, yes. So I would say there are three things that boards need to have on their mind. The first is around physical assets at risk of natural disasters.
Yes.
We've got
Yes.
A 14% global increase in extreme wildfires expected by 2030. We have $25 trillion in projected losses to global supply chains by 2025. So
wow.
We know a lot of our physical assets are at risk. And even as maybe a startup or a smaller company who doesn't have a large physical footprint, your supply chain is also at risk. And all of that falls into this bucket as well.
Right. And your customers, right?
Absolutely. And then yeah, how does that impact your customers? How does it impact getting your product to your customers? We say supply chain, but actually when we're talking about sustainability, it often covers your entire value chain. So it is from source all the way to customer and to use. The second area, as you had mentioned, is around resource scarcity. So whether that's energy, it could be water, it could be biodiversity and other nature impacts. But we know that AI has a huge demand on the environment for a lot of different reasons. Affordability is a huge issue from an energy perspective. And resource scarcity absolutely is top of the agenda for boards and for leadership today, in particular around AI, because we know that it has high energy demands, it has high water demands, and also raw materials or other critical minerals. And so not only is there a drain on the environment where those data centers are going up, but then there's also the geopolitical context and being able to source and supply what you need to be able to build those data centers and to run them. And so that's a second area that we look at a lot under the sustainability umbrella. And then third, there is continued compliance and assurance requirements. I feel like we had a huge push over the past 4 years with jurisdictions coming out, having mandatory reporting, some of it being put to bed, some of it being delayed, some of it, you know, still in negotiation.
Sure.
But it's still out there. It's still coming and something you need to keep your eye on.
Yep.
What's most important, though, as you string together all three of these concepts is physical assets at risk, energy and natural resource demands are risks to your organization. And so the whole thrust of compliance reporting is really saying, have you thought about that? And what are you doing about it to mitigate those risks? Whether that's to you as a business today, to you as a business in the next 5 to 10 years, or within your value chain, because that obviously has an impact on your overall enterprise value.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So if I think about this from an audit committee lens, maybe for just a minute, right? And, you know, again, just thinking more broadly from maybe industry agnostic to some extent, right? What should they be focused on specifically? And maybe, you know, go all the way from we probably should have been paying attention to this, but we weren't, to, you know, we've done some things, but, you know, what's the next level?
I think most critically, it is really around that risk conversation. I know some audit committees do have enterprise risk management and risk management process rolling up into them. Others sort of have a separate committee, but obviously there's intersection there. And that is most important right now from a sustainability lens. So one of the big things, and also ties into some of the reporting requirements. So if you are subject to the California rules, those technically became effective January 1st, 2026. They have been stayed because they are going through court, primarily because the regulations haven't been fully written yet, but the laws themselves have been enacted and are effective. And that rule is really, what are your climate-related risks and what are you doing to mitigate them? What is your governance around them and what is your strategy? And so having
just to clarify again for our listeners, is that requirement different if you're public or private?
It is not. It is required for any company that has $1 billion or more in revenue. And it doesn't have to be just generated in California. It's consolidated revenues. But you have to be doing business in California, which could mean a small sales office there, one individual.
It's a broad definition, right? Yeah. Yep.
So a lot of companies can get scoped in. And even if it's not this year, right, and you haven't quite met those revenue thresholds, it may come in down the line.
Yep.
And largely, I think it's just good business for a company to do a climate risk assessment for themselves to understand what those risks are. there are varying levels. So you can do more of a qualitative analysis where you're really looking at your physical assets, you know, where they may be at risk, or you can take it all the way to the quantitative assessment and actually calculate the financial impact in the future of those risks to your business. So there's different ways to do it. California accepts both ways. But from a board perspective, truly understanding those risks and how the company is mitigating them is the number one question to ask.
Yep, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. I'm going to switch gears for just a minute. Because we are partners at KPMG, we know how very busy our M&A folks are, right? So, which is wonderful, right? But that is super important for companies to think through, right? Like, how does this show up in diligence and valuations and things like that, especially for, you know, venture capital backed and PE backed companies?
Absolutely. So we know that a lot of the large private equity firms have climate teams that they are actually very much focused on the goals and targets that they've set for themselves, and then obviously how that drives down into their portfolio companies. I would say for M&A in general, right, if a large corporation is also contemplating a merger or an acquisition, they often have long-term climate targets that they're trying to achieve. And so we do see some due diligence being done around companies' sustainability strategies, their performance, the way that they are acting and responding around these risks in order to allow for the PE or the corporation to be able to meet their goals, because that ultimately rolls into it. So that's one area where we see it. The second, actually, we're working through how it does truly show up in the valuations. We are looking at right now for some companies their strategic energy management as ways to potentially reduce the cost of energy and utilities, whether it's water as well, and helping companies understand, right, how do we take out some of those costs, which also are beneficial to the environment. And so we're trying to find those things that are considered, you know, win-wins. And it's funny because I've been working in sustainability for 15 years now, and these were conversations we were having in 2010.
Yeah.
We're having them again in 2026. But I think what's so exciting is actually we have far more data and we have more tools and we have AI to help us to be able to do this more effectively and efficiently than we've ever been able to before.
Which is awesome. I mean, I'm sure that's an evolution, right? And just like anything else, it hopefully gets better and better and smarter and smarter. Okay, how about, and you touched on this a little bit, Maura, but data governance, system integration, we talked a little bit about automation, but also, you know, what does good look like, especially for a private company who is, you know, needs to be scrappy, right? And needs to continue to grow the top line, right? But then also trying to be cognizant of some of these things. You know, what do you look for there? What do you see companies doing that really do need to kind of keep things, you know, under control, but yet still try to meet the goals and objectives?
Sure. I think to your point, the question is, what is your goal and objective? Many companies we see are solely compliance focused, and I think that's okay. It's just a question then of, you know, can you enhance your value and your valuation if you are tracking other information? But if we just look at from a compliance perspective, we are actually starting to see a trend of companies outsourcing their sustainability reporting.
That's been for a little while, right, Maura? And so you're seeing that trend continue?
Yes. And we at KPMG actually are rolling out a managed service, you know, that we're piloting right now because the reality is it's expensive to have a team internally to collect all of this information and meet the requirements and the standards to both understand what is mandated by the standards, as well as have the appropriate controls over the information. And so having a third party to help you do that with obviously appropriate oversight and management review is one of the big trends that we're seeing, particularly when we're talking about smaller reporting programs. I would say beyond that, we are looking closely at third-party risk management that companies are doing. Supply chain is a huge issue right now in terms of traceability of your products. Where are they coming from? Are they coming from deforested land? I mean, one of the things that is always a little bit bonkers to me is the European deforestation regulation, includes wooden pallets that data servers may be shipped on as something that would need to be ensured didn't come from, deforested land, like the rainforest in Brazil that was like cut down in order to like make the pallets. It could be leather, right, that go into the seats of cars or even clothing because the cattle was raised on deforested land. And so traceability is really complicated and it's a big piece of things. And then lastly, I would say it's just data in general. So obviously data is really complex in order to be able to meet all these compliance requirements. And we've also got extended producer responsibilities that are coming out in various states in the U.S. So this is around packaging and waste. So the idea being that right now we as consumers and municipalities are paying to dispose of all of the garbage, the packages on our potato chips, on our soda cans, et cetera. These EPR schemes are trying to shift that cost back to the producer. And now fees have to be paid for everything that is being sold to the consumer. So these are relatively new. One came online in Oregon last year and fees had to be paid. California's is online, but they're still evaluating. They haven't figured out what the fees are yet. And there are several other states that are slated to start and require fee payment in 2027 and beyond. So when I talk about data, number one, in order to be able to use AI, you have to have good data because you can't just slap AI on garbage. Like we've always said that garbage in, garbage out, but it's very much true for this. But then there's also the level of granularity of information that's important because the way that you can reduce costs is by streamlining data collection, doing it once, and then using it for all of these different
And then just getting it set up and it does it automatically, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it needs to be at a level of detail and granularity that serves, the EPR reporting that's necessary, the traceability information. California, Australia has requirements, et cetera. And so being thoughtful about setting up your data collection process from the beginning, maybe spending a little bit more to get that lowest level of information, but having it automated so that you don't have to, worry about it going forward is another way to be more efficient.
And so, Maura, this isn't just your ERP. This can be any other systems that you use, regardless of what type of company you are, right, to track the sale of goods and services. So this could be much more broader reaching than just you need to have more than just a good ERP. Your whole system needs to your earlier point, have good data, right?
That's right. Yes. And I think there is a movement, although we're not quite there yet, to try to get all this into your ERP. Ideally, it can all be housed in the ERP, but nobody is fully sophisticated enough yet quite to do that. Yeah. So more from a controls and a data accuracy perspective, yes, we're looking at, your procurement systems, your supplier systems, packaging, your bill of materials, like however you're doing, your costs and procurement, all of that needs to have good controls and the right data tagging to get it to where it needs to be.
Well, so Maura, this is wonderful, but I will tell you, like, I'm like, well, this seems like a lot. So if we take a step back and we think, okay, there's a lot here, right? Especially depending on what type of company you are, where you operate, what the rules are, et cetera. Where is a good place for companies to start? And again, if I bring it back full circle to the board, what have you seen in terms of best practices for how? And let's maybe start with like smaller boards. Like what's a good way for them to get their arms around this?
Number one is to understand what regulations are applicable to you.
That's step one. Yeah.
If you approach it with a compliance lens, which I think is completely reasonable, right?
Yep.
Then understanding what you actually have to do.
Yeah, where do you have to? Yes.
is step one. Step two then is understanding the broader trends of information that your potential buyers or investors are asking you for. Yeah. And the number one thing there is usually greenhouse gas emissions and calculating scope one and scope two greenhouse gas emissions with the potential for scope three at some point in the not too distant future. And then once you have that process in place, then thinking about getting assurance over that information as well.
Yeah.
Number three is really about the risk assessment. And I talked a lot about climate risk because you can go really deep on climate risk and there's, you know, very formal ways to do it. But I would also recommend thinking about your overall enterprise risk management process and making sure that you have an environmental component to it, right? That you're evaluating, you know, the broader swath of environmental risks. Similarly, it could be for social risks as well. So, you know, things like forced labor and your supply chain are popping up, that type of stuff. So trying to integrate ERM with your environmental considerations is another good way with, you know, a number of resources to be able to get to that answer.
And would you also say, again, back to, and KPMG's not the only one that can help with this, right? But we can. But the other thing to do would be to get an expert's help, right? To make sure that you understand the rules, right? And again, where you operate, who you work with in terms of vendors and again, customers, because a lot of times I've seen, you know, our clients, their customers require certain things too, right? And so, but then I think also, you know, the competitive landscape is important, right? And so you want to be a leader. You don't want to be a follower, right? In terms of having your ducks in a row, you don't want to wait till this comes up in as a question in diligence, you know, to do a deal or something like that. So getting experts involved seems like that would be, and you can start small, right? Like you said, start with compliance and then kind of go from there, right, over time.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because sustainability can be used as a competitive advantage. It can be a differentiator. And to some extent, it's almost expected with a certain swath of consumer. And so if you're not thinking about how your product is being developed and how you can position it in a way that gets a higher premium or meets the market where they are, I think you could be leaving a lot of money on the table.
Well, and it's also, if I think about technology companies, right, especially AI companies, you know, really being thoughtful about the energy you're using and how you're using that, right, and how that's either offset or how you're going to be doing it in a more sustainable way, frankly, just seems like the right thing to do for our world, right? Like, I think we can all agree on that, right?
Absolutely. And it's funny that you say that, Erica, because I think one of the reasons we're in the spot where we are today is I get the sense that the last 5 to 7 years, we've had this thrust of it's the right thing to do. It's the moral thing to do. And I think for a lot of us, like we still feel that is true. But we are faced with all of the geopolitical uncertainty and the challenges that we're experiencing right now. And as a result, we also have to have that value conversation associated with the right thing to do.
Right.
With that said, the value conversation is about reducing costs on energy, making sure that energy stays affordable, both for the data center and the AI user, as well as, you know, the community that's around us. And, making sure that you are getting the most value out of the programs and the initiatives that you're putting in place. And you're not just kind of doing, you know, the small things just for the sake of being able to, and we call it greenwashing, right? Just for the sake of being able to tell a story about something that we did, but that it really does have a material impact on the value of the company.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Maura, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for coming back to visit us. And I do think this is really important, and I appreciate you taking the time to educate our listeners. So thank you.
Thanks for having me, Erica. I was glad to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to KPMG's Privately Speaking podcast, and be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.